We want to first conclude Revelation, the 12th chapter. We have the last verse to complete. And as you recall, we left off last week with the flood of waters from the dragon and serpent's mouth trying to swallow up the woman. And that represented the French, the truth that brought about the French Revolution of the rights of men. But the French people accepted those truths. And Satan's hoped for pendulum swing back to church and king's control of the people and the rejection of anything new in the way of religion and otherwise would have brought about a persecution of the woman in general, which, as we just said, it didn't happen. That was our last week's discussion, and it brings us up to verse 17, but we want to read enough here to kind of catch that. Sister Gina, could you read for us in Revelation 12, verse 13 through 17, please?
Excuse me. And when the dragon saw that he was cast down to the earth, he persecuted the woman that brought forth the man-child. And there were given to the woman the two wings of the great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness unto her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the face of the serpent. And the serpent cast out of his mouth after the woman water as a river, that he might cause her to be carried away by the stream. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the river which the dragon cast out of his mouth. And the dragon waxed wroth with the woman and went away to make war with the rest of her seed that keep the commandments of God and hold the testimony of Jesus.
Okay, very good. Did either you or Brother Mark, because you have an open mic, have any opening comments on what you've just read?
No.
I will, only because it's kind of repetitive of, I had the chance to comment on these verses last week, I think. But like you brought out, it's, so the times and half the time, we all know that that's the 1260 years from 539 to 1799, and which, ends with the French Revolution there, and, Satan let these, like you brought out, the rights of men, these truths on, you know, what the people should have been having all along and were being denied over there in France. And, so it backfired, so to speak, on Satan, because the revolution came and, Napoleon threw the Pope in prison and all this other stuff. And then, just finally in 17 there, this seems like something, still a future where the dragon will, was enraged with a woman and went off to make war with her children, kind of like the final feet members, possibly. And that'll be my
I have a comment. So on 17, that's really the only one I was concentrating on. It, the dragon, so it's Satan, it's looking for, trying to, those who are of the church, 144,000, it looks like he's trying to sway them and get them to fall. So he's make war with the rest of her seed. So that's, I believe that's the seed that we're talking about. Over.
Okay. Well, thank you both. Very good. Good comments to start. Thank you. Ruth.
I have a note. I wonder if anyone else has it, that at the end of 17, it should say, and he stood upon the sands of the sea. The first sentence of the 13th chapter should be at the end of 12, talking about the dragon. And he stood upon the sands of the sea. And then 13:1 starts, and I saw a beast. Does anyone else have that note?
Well, let's take a look. I'm going to look in the diaglot. I see Sister Debbie's hands raised. I'll get to you after we contemplate this question in a second. Sister Bessie?
I have also this footnote.
Okay. Very good. Sister Cheryl?
Rotherham at the end says, in holding the witness of Jesus, and he stood upon the sand of the sea. So Rotherham has that. Over.
Okay, very good. Appreciate that. Does Rotherham have a note on there, Sister Cheryl? Sometimes they have it as a footnote of the source.
Not with my electronic, it doesn't. Sorry. Oh,
no, okay. No, that's good. I'm not seeing it in the diaglot, so it might not be in, the Vatican 1160. Sister Debbie?
Yeah, I have a note in the RVIC. I can't remember the brother's name.
Jim Parkinson.
Yeah, that. And he says that in a majority of lesser Greek manuscripts, SYR, I guess that's Syriac, read I stood, which would change verse 12:18 into the beginning of verse 13:1. So it's the word he or I. So I guess what he's saying is that if it's I stood, then it would go to 13:1. But if it's he stood, that would be the dragon. And that's not my original comment, but that's what I wanted to bring up. Over.
Okay. So while it is a course of interest, we try to be as faithful to the original writing as possible. I'm not sure it's going to – I don't see that it particularly changes the impact of either 12:17 or 13:1. I think we come away with the same or very similar lesson unless someone sees something I'm not picking up on, which would be easy. All right. We're going to leave it there then. Sister Day, your question earlier?
Yeah. Well, just on that note, it would make a difference whether it's John that stood on the sand or the dragon that stood on the sand. I think there would be different, meanings to that, but that's not what I wanted. I thought it was interesting that it said, verse 17 said, the rest of her seed. And it's almost like saying, well, some of the seed is already gone. So it kind of sets it later on in the gospel age. Because if it was, you know, at the beginning of the gospel age, you would have all the seed would still be there. They wouldn't have passed away yet or, you know, gone to sleep in Christ. So I just thought that was interesting. Over.
Yes. And my point is that we still have the dragon going after the remnant of the seed, whether it's in verse 17 or verse 13, chapter 13, and that we still see this beast coming up out of the sea, whether that's in part of 12:17 or 13:1. That's my the point I was making. However, Sister Debbie? You muted yourself.
I'm sorry. if it's the sand of the sea in relation to the earth or the earthly seed, maybe, or you know how I'm thinking about Abraham when the Lord said his seed would be as numerous as the sands of the seashore. So maybe it would say that the dragon is kind of controlling Israel at that point, maybe, or along that line? Just a thought. I could be wrong. Yeah. Not new. Over.
Okay. Thank you. Any more questions or comments on Sister Ruth's comment? Okay, we're going to leave it there at that. So what's the difference between the woman and the remnant of her seed? What's the difference between the woman and the remnant of her seed in the 12th chapter here? What does a woman represent? And then what might the remnant of the seed represent? Sister Carrie.
It might mean that the woman is the early Christian converts, the early church, and the seed is people who have come out and have stayed over time. Not come out, I mean have stayed in over time. So it's minus the people who have been shaved off the edges through different confrontations that make them leave, or if they've gone to falsehoods. That's it.
Okay, well, we appreciate the woman was in our first verse, and so it did show the early church, but here this woman went through the 1260 years, so we've got the woman still with us after 1799, the end of the 1260 years. So it's changed from the early church, even though that was true. So let's ferret that out a little bit more, Brother Adi.
So my thought would be that the remnant of the seed is those that are left remaining after the first resurrection. Then when Jesus comes and takes the church up in 1878, I believe it was. And the remnant is those that are still remaining on the earth. Over.
Okay. All right. Good. Thank you. Further comment? Brother David.
Sorry. I was thinking the woman represented the true church. It's doctrines and the remnant of her seed would be the feet members of the little flock. Over.
Okay. Very good. Very good. If I was to boil it down to my way of looking at it, I would say the woman represents the pure element of the church, not just the 144,000 throughout the gospel age, but the pure element of the church. I think you could probably see the great company in there. Might even say the spirit begotten. But that the seed would be the 144,000. And as brought out, the remnant of the seed would be the last members of that 144,000, as was being mentioned. So it suggests that this verse 17 was sometime continues and will undoubtedly find a completion in the future. But we certainly have it after 1799. The dragon was still wroth that his plan didn't work out. Satan's plan didn't work out. And so he's mad at all the spirit begotten, the woman, as he was throughout the whole gospel age. And yet he realizes that, as Brother Adi brought out, after 1878, when the sleeping saints were resurrected, then that would leave a relative remnant still on the earth to be completed of the bride class. And it's still not complete. So the adversary has been trying to make war to prohibit the completion of the seed class. Satan makes war to try to stop the 144,000 from being completed. So the war takes on a variety of aspects, including deceptions, delusions, and persecutions. Brother Norm.
I'm wondering, why would we not start the remnant in the year 1800?
Well, why would you?
Because that doesn't that end the 1260 years, 1799, which this is the context we're discussing, and therefore, if the 1799 has ended, the 1260 years has ended, all those saints have gone through that experience in the wilderness, the woman, and now we're entering into the last phase. There were saints here before the sleeping saints were raised. There were the ones at that time. So wouldn't we just include them as part of the remnant who survived after 1799? I don't know. I don't quite understand, but curious. Over.
Oh, we certainly could start it then. One, you know, I can understand that. That's a good thought. I liked the thought of the remnant after 1878 because Satan would recognize that, he can't just kill the saints because they're immediately changed and he's further completing the body. So he had to switch to more particularly to greater delusions. But I can certainly understand 1800. That's a good way of looking at it. Brother Adi.
So the dragon was enraged with the woman and went off to wage war against the rest of her offspring. So the dragon is the civil government, and it does something different. It's not like it now decides to wake up and wage war. Hasn't it been waging war with the woman all this time? There has to be something different that shows that the civil governments are taking up arms against the seed. Is my thought. Something special that we can say today, yes, the dragon is waging war directly against her offspring, which today we don't see it that much, because there still is tolerance for the Christian community in many areas of the world. Over.
So that's a good point, because in my mind, I view this verse as referring to a future persecution. I think this is referring to when the eighth head is empowered as a future church state to persecute the final members out of its anger, its rage, Satan's rage. And that, we do have the persecution of the true church pictured in Revelation 17, with the harlot. And the kings of the earth at that time go to make war with Jesus and those that are with him, called chosen and faithful. Let's take a quick read there. Revelation 17, and Sister Cheryl, could you read there for us? Let's say 11 through 14, please. 11 to 14.
And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth, and is of the seven, and goeth into perdition. And the ten horns which thou sawest are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind, and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them. And he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called the chosen and faithful.
Do you have any comment here, Sister Cheryl?
Well, it's just showing a period of time. I have that it would be Victor Emmanuel. I think he was 1870, maybe, if my notes are right. So it's just showing the divisions of power and what's going on and the time frame that would be in those later 1800s. Over.
Okay. I'll smooth that over a little bit. Victor Emmanuel was the We didn't read in verse 10, but that would have been the sixth head. Five are fallen, one is. And we're going to read there later today if we get into the 13th chapter. But nonetheless, that's probably what your note's referring to, Sister Cheryl.
It is, yeah. Now that I see it's under 10.
And so these kings have received no power as kings of at the time, but they will for 1 hour, a short period, with the eighth head, a future event. And that they have one mind, they give their power unto the beast, the papacy, church and state with their daughters, church and state system. And they're going to make war with the lamb. And the way they make war with the lamb is by attacking the feet members. But it says that these get the victory at the end. And so, in our mind then, as we were saying, if I was to be most definitive, I view that Revelation 12:17, that final conflict, persecution of the true church, to this, when the church and state as an eighth head is empowered to make war. That's normally how I would interpret that. Sister Debbie and then Brother Chris.
Well, I was thinking that, you know, in before, like Brother Norm was saying, before the return of Christ, Pastor Russell was already out there investigating and learning the truth and getting the truth out. And it seems to me that when, you know, I'm looking at, like, not just Pastor Russell's writings, but if you go outside of that and look at the time and you read the articles and newspaper stuff, you see that Pastor Russell was being attacked big time by several. I mean, he mentions it in the reprints, but not as much as what was really going on. He was attacked not only by his peers, but he was also attacked by, I mean, even his wife, you know, was causing him problems. And that's the way the adversary works. And the dragon, even though it is government, you have the Roman dragon and stuff, but Satan is also the dragon because he controls all of that stuff. So it just seems to me that the persecution was going on as soon as the truth started coming out. The persecution started coming on. So it makes me think that maybe it could be both. You know, it could be both the church governments, in a sense. You know, the various leaders of the churches, the nominal systems, were coming against him, you know. I don't know. It just seems to me that persecution has been going on ever since the truth started coming out. Over.
Well, persecution has been on the church from the very beginning, throughout the entire gospel age. So the truth is always persecuted. That's true. Brother Chris.
I can see the applications that are coming out in the comments of, you know, verse 16 is definitely 1789 to 1799, and with Voltaire and everybody. And then verse 17 snapped off, moved down the stream of time to a future time when it's more specifically targeting the saints. But I was sort of thinking, like Brother Norm had suggested, you know, in the flow of time, is there a way that it would fit? And I'm just going to throw it out there as another part of the mix is, you know, you can do war in a number of ways, very blatant, but there's also subterfuge. And what happened immediately after this truth came out, well, that brings it right to 1800, and soon after comes all these Bible societies and shortly after that, free education provided by the state. So the dragon is controlled by Satan. That's the civil government is controlled by Satan. The pure element, all of these Bible societies coming out and people getting together and bringing about the scriptures and studying it. Finally, the Bible is available. And very soon after, by 1859, you've got Darwin and evolution, and that's all introduced into it. And now this is like really becoming part of the mix of the religious element as well. And the true woman still has to be weary of all of these things being injected into this war against the truth. And then all the other, of course, dogmas and things still coming out of the Catholic Church and the Lutherans and the Protestantism and all that. So I think that's all part of the war immediately against the pure element of the Church, a spirit begotten, who has to be wary of all these things. And particularly even now at the time of the end, the true 144,000, these things haven't gone away at all. They're more pillars of the learned society than ever. So I just want to throw that in as part of the mix as a possibility. Over.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate that. Other comments? Brother Dan.
Brother Rick, I'm just thinking of Satan's plan, if you will, as brought out, is to keep his kingdom. And in order to keep his kingdom, he realizes his enemies have been natural Israel and spiritual Israel. And so as brought out, he sees that the saints who were faithful in 1878 didn't remain dead, but were changed to new creatures. And so he understands that his war is with the true church to keep the 144,000 from being complete, is his only way to remain the ruler of this present evil world. So that's the fight, and that's the future war, and that's what's described as brought out in the verses in Revelation 17. And we see that, of course, he fails. There's no way he can win against God, because this is God's plan, our Lord Jesus, and the faithful on the other side of the veil. And those final feet members will be victorious against Satan. But this is the future war that he wages, and it's in an attempt to continue to rule over the earth. Over.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Ruth.
Well, it seems also that it's a warning to the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ, not to think you're safe now because the power of papacy has been broken. And it's easy to think, well, there won't be any more persecution because the power of papacy has been broken. You hear that all the time. The churches are losing their influences, and it's kind of a warning that the dragon's not gone. He's going to come back to get you, and be vigilant. In my margin, it says the dragon went away. Almost like it's on a mission now to get the final remnant. So, over.
All right, very good. So, let's take a look in Revelation 16. And Sister Roseanne, could you read there for us Revelation 16 and verse 13 and 14?
Yes. Revelation 16, 13 and 14. And I saw three unclean spirits like frogs coming out of the mouth of the dragon, out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. For they are spirits of demons performing signs which go out to the kings and of the whole world to gather them to the battle of the great, of that great day of God Almighty.
All right. So I know we jump right in the middle here, Sister Roseanne, but do you have any comments on the setting, time setting, or other comments here? Whatever you might have.
Well, I know that I have notes that, again, the dragon is the civil, beast is the papacy, and the false prophet is the Protestant federation. So, which would make me think that this is probably, and again, I'm just jumping right in, the 1800s, the Protestant Federation was formed, I think, in the early 1800s, 1830s. I could be wrong, though. And the spirits are the false doctrines. So they're just repeating these false doctrines. That's all I have. I don't know if it's right or not.
So, Sister Roseanne, before you go, it's true the Evangelical Alliance was formed in 1846. That was the Protestants having a form of uniting, but not to the point of being the false prophet, because we learn in the 13th chapter that it doesn't become the false prophet until the two-horned beast, the Church of England, joins with them. So this is in the sixth plague of the seven last plagues. Yeah. So would it seem future?
No.
Okay, all right. Let me call on someone else.
I know, I'm sorry.
So that means I'm
sorry.
That's quite all right. Sister Alice, let me call on you. So Sister Alice.
I would say that it is future, because I think the plagues are future. And when these three unclean spirits come out of their mouths, what they do is they're going to bring the last plague when they get work together. So the dragon, the civil, the beast, papacy, the false prophet, Protestantism, are the ones that will get together at the very end. And then they're gathered together at Armageddon. And then the seventh plague is poured. But I believe the plagues are future, so that this uniting of these three are future.
All right. Well, we concur with that, Sister Alice, as well. And so you see, I was bringing this here because we have our dragon. And we're talking about the dragon back in chapter 12, verse 17. And we're talking about this war. And we see the dragon has allies. It has the church, the nominal church, as allies, papacy and Protestantism. But in your mind, Sister Alice, at Revelation 12:17, while you got your mic open, how have you understood that? Revelation 12:17.
Well, I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to study this, but I would say that it would look to me like it would be the along the lines of the future war against the remnant, the church, the feet members, and that would I would think could parallel the last plagues.
Okay. All right, good. Thank you. Appreciate that. Brother Godwin.
Thank you, Brother Ray. So I'm just looking at the prophetic timeline chart that you provided, and that's got the hour of power that goes through all of these. So these three, the beast, the false prophets, the amalgamation of their power seems to be a futuristic event, like already the brethren have brought out. So that ties in with that 17:13 we just read about the one mind and giving the power to the beast. Looking at this verse in 12:17 about making the war with the remnant seed, would there be any relation to the picture of Elijah smiting the water, we remember, in my understanding, that's where the final seed members would testify before they're taken away. And would there be any connection to that?
Well, just a quick answer. I think yes, I think you're right. I think that's part of their message is against a church-state union, which then brings the fiery chariot upon them, separates the little flock, Elijah, from the great company, Elisha. So we would certainly think that fits in well. Thank you. Brother James, Sister Molly.
Yes, thank you. In reference to 12:17, just in the flow of the other verses that precede it, knowing that the dragon is the civil power, it makes sense that that what it's trying to say is that though the type of persecution, like we studied all the, first the dragon was pagan Rome persecuting early on, then it was the Holy Roman Empire, still civil power, but influenced by the papacy, Satan's fraudulent corporation there, running the civil power, guiding, influencing the civil power. Then with this flood of truth, the French Revolution that spared the church, the dragon, the civil power, didn't suddenly become the true church, but that type of persecution stopped. And so, but it doesn't mean it's ended. So it's still a dragon, it's still an enemy after 1799, immediately, but it wasn't waging war right away. It went away to wage war, saving up for a future time. So it's still after 1800 and on, it's still an enemy, still a dragon, just not persecuting the way it was. So, and we see that even today, we still have relative apathy. We can still meet in most parts of the world. We're not being actively persecuted by civil governments that way. Not when we're referencing the hour of power and these three frogs, that's a much more of a united effort, a war effort on the true church than we experience now. Over.
Okay, all good points. Very good. Appreciate that. Brother Michael.
So I have a question on Revelation 16. So the point of the bulls in the stream of timeline, what exactly is this? Is this at the tail end of the victims, when the victims are around? And the reason why I'm asking this is because if you look at verse 17, that's when the angel says it is finished, which basically supposes that that's when the work of the church is finished. So, but I'm just not getting the understanding in terms of the timelines for when the bowls are being poured. So I don't know if you can help clarify, when this is.
Well, you're asking a good question, Brother Michael, but we can't take the time. We did go through this quite a bit when we were looking in 15 at the picture of heaven being opened and seeing the Ark of the Covenant in heaven. When we were in Revelation 11 and verse 19, 11:19. If you wanted to listen to the studies back there, we did a side study on everywhere this Ark of the Testament was seen. And in that side study, we went to Revelation 15 and verse 5. I looked and behold the temple of the tabernacle of the testimony in heaven was open, and I saw the seven angels come out of the temple having the seven plagues. So we'd spent a lot of time there back there on that, explaining that we believe the seven last plagues are the same as the seven trumpet messages that were trumpeted by the seven messengers throughout the gospel age, but at the end, when the church is complete, but the final feet members are still in the flesh. They have the privilege of being used to pronounce those same truths that the previous seven messengers had spoken, but now the Lord has set the stage that these plagues are forced on the nominal system. And this will result in the burning of the bundled tares, the nominal Christians and their denominations. And that after, as a result of this, pouring out of these, condensed truths, the final feet members are martyred. And that's the point of Revelation 16, 17. When the seventh message is poured into the air, there came a great voice out of the temple saying, "It is done." It's like Jesus hanging on the cross saying, "It is finished." It's an expression showing that the final feet members have done what they were appointed in their final message. They're martyred. And then comes the terrible revolutionary earthquake, which pulls down the city, the three parts of the city, verse 19. The dragon, beast, and false prophet elements are taken down. The civil power, the papal power, and the Protestant power. So I think that's all we can really spend time on that. Sorry, we love the study. That would be a way to look back at it. We'll take a couple of comments on that, and then we'll move on. Brother Adi?
So just a comment. I don't want to get into too much, but just for thought, that the three impure spirits that look like frogs, it would be an inference to think that they were three frogs, because it doesn't say that there's three frogs. It could be a multitude of frogs. And the last time we've seen a plague about frogs was that in Egypt, where the Lord said, "I will send a plague of frogs on your whole country, and the Nile will teem with frogs. They will come up into your palace and your bedroom and onto your bed and your houses and officials." That's saying that these three spirits are everywhere that the people are. You can't get away from them. So that's just a thought, but I kind of like that thought, that the frogs represent the element of being everywhere, and you cannot get away from these impure spirits. Over.
The pervasiveness of this false doctrinal teachings that result in gathering the kings together of the whole earth. Okay. Thank you. Sister Cindy.
I just have a real quick question. Are we going to get into the message of the plagues?
No. No, sorry. Darn. We've done that. We have done that before, but that's not now.
Okay.
Okay. Sister Debbie?
I think Sister Cindy probably means, are we going to get into the message of the plagues when we get there?
Okay, thank you. Brother Norm?
Well, I just wanted to say, in my mind, we've seen the dragon and the beast working together all down through history. But where has the false prophet showed up? If we understand that to be the confederacy spoken of in Isaiah 8, verse 12, then we are looking for a cooperation of all three of those together. And for what purpose? To gather the kings of the earth to the final battle of destruction, which is the time of trouble. So if that has happened in the past or is happening, how would we understand this false prophet, these three institutions, to be doing that now or in the past? What are these miracles? And what has the false prophet claimed through these three spirits, through the dragon and the beast and the cooperation? I think that's what we're waiting for. We're waiting for all three of those to come together. And Pastor says it's for self-preservation, the present evil world, to preserve their order of things. But like Satan's plans backfire most of the time, this also will backfire when in what we're discussing, Revelation 17, that 1 hour of power for that short period of time when they attempt to preserve their power by
persecuting the remnant of the seed, we will see that. We will see, if you watch the news at all, I try not to watch it, but, you know, they're saying things like people who say, doomsday messages are not helping society. So Satan is trying, has been, to, cause confusion with all these different principles and different groups and the anarchists, and he's just trying to make it so confusing that no one knows what's what. And that's why, you know, if you watch the news, you just hear the most bizarrest things that you never thought possible, that society would come to this. So by the time these three come together, things will be such a mess, as they already are now, but they will be much worse, that by the time these plagues begin, there will be, and the seventh plague especially, things will already be in such disarray that it won't take much for this explosion time of trouble to happen. So in my mind, yeah, it's got to be future, because we have not seen this declaration by these three institutions, and that'll be the real persecution. Anyone who tries to stand against that with principles of truth and righteousness will be persecuted the most, as we see a lot of the different groups out there now do have good points, claiming liberties and justice and things. So there is that already, but we will add the message of the truth and God's perspective of things, and that will just not be good for us in the material world. But that's where Satan loses his war with the Lamb, because it's a spiritual war, not a physical one. And I had one more thought, but I forget it, so we'll just leave it at that. Over.
All right. Thanks, Brother Norm. So, brethren, this phrase, the remnant of her seed, where does that take your mind to scripturally? Remnant of her seed and a war. Okay, let's take a look at Genesis, the third chapter. Sister Molly, could you read there for us? Genesis 3 and verse 13 through 15, please.
Okay, and this is, I'm reading from the NIV. Then the Lord said to the woman, What is this you have done? The woman said, the serpent deceived me, and I ate. So the Lord God said to the serpent, because you have done this, cursed are you above all the livestock and all the wild animals. You will crawl on your belly, and you will eat dust all the days of your life. And I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your offspring and hers. He will crush your head, and you will strike his heel. To the woman, he said, I will greatly increase your pains in childbearing, and with pain you will give birth to children. Your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you. To Adam, he said, because you listened. Sorry.
I actually said to 15, sorry. I must not have been clear. So
I probably just forgot. I was reading.
In verse 15, focus on that, Sister Molly. What does that seem to be telling us?
I will put enmity between you and the woman. So it's this, if we're thinking of it in reference to our Revelation study, thinking of you being Satan and the woman being the church. I don't know if that's where you're, I'm assuming that's where what you're thinking, that there's a war, essentially, or they're at odds with one another. They are enemies. And between your offspring and hers, so the children of the world, essentially, those that aren't in harmony with God, those that aren't belong to the prince of this world, and hers would be those that are aligned with God or seeking righteousness, seeking after him, and essentially the church members.
Okay, very good. So thank you for that. So what we're seeing here in this is this, when Adam and Eve were evicted, as brought out, the Lord is punishing the serpent representing Satan, But he's saying that there's going to be enmity, and yet we're focusing on the seed, and here the seed is representative of the feet members, because it says that it's going to bruise the heel of the seed. That's the feet. And actually, it's the final members of the feet. Because whenever you walk into a room, the last part that goes in is the heel of your last foot. The toes go in before your heel. Now, the point is that bruising of the heel of the true seed is, again, repeating, the persecution, the martyrdom of the final feet members of the bride of Christ, the church, the seed. Yet they will then result in the bruising of Satan's head. It will lead to his destruction. Okay. So we think with that information, we're saying that in our Revelation 12 verse 17, this is part of the imagery, the remnant of first seed, the final feet members of the seed. These would be the heel members of the feet, the seed class. And we like the thought that was emphasized that the dragon goes to make war, that it suggests there's a time period before this final attack on the final remnant members, the final feet members. In fact, I'm going to say the heel members. And I think that's what is suggested in the Revelation 17 passages we looked at. I think that's suggested in the Revelation 16 scriptures that we considered. And there's another verse here in the Revelation that we want to make a connection to. But let me call on Ruth first.
Well, it seems like from the other verses we've read that when the dragon makes war with the remnant of her seed, he's not alone. He's with the beast and the false prophet. So the dragon war against the woman or the woman's seed isn't secularism. That's very easy to think. But it's the churches, the false churches, that are the enemy. And I think secularism is causing people to think the churches are our friend, but they're not. They're going to make war with the final feet members and get power. And I think they might get power because of all the secularism. People want to think that somehow the churches are in favor of righteousness, and they're not. So they're really, it's like the Revelation is showing us the reality, not how it appears. Over.
Yep, very true. It's one of Satan's grand tactics, is to drive people to the nominal churches because they're opposed to abortion, they're opposed to homosexuality rights, they're opposed to various things, which we aren't saying we're not, but that doesn't make us want to be part of the nominal churches, which believe in a Trinity and a hellfire God. Nor do we want to be part of any evangelical group that wants to be a Christian government, because that's spiritual fornication depicted by harlotry. So good points, Ruth. We very much appreciate that. Let's take a look at Revelation 10. Now, of course, we studied this chapter. In Revelation 10, there was similarly a flood of water. There was similarly that depicted the French Revolution. When we studied Revelation 10 together, we spent a lot of time in Daniel 12, because that too had a flood. And the point is that when we studied that, this Revelation 10, we saw that the little book that was open, like verse 10:10, I took the little book out of the angel's hand and ate it up. And in my mouth, it was sweet as honey. As soon as I had eaten it, my belly was bitter. The little book was the book of Daniel. And the time prophecies were due to be understood at the time of the end, at the time when the French Revolution took place. And shortly thereafter, 1829, we did have the wise would understand. That was the Brother William Miller movement and the Adventists talking once again about our Lord's return. But suffice it here to say that understanding the time prophecies in Daniel to where we were in the stream of time, the church, it would, the understanding would be sweet in the mouth, but it would bring about bitter experiences. And that's the persecution of standing for the truth. But it's verse 11, chapter 10, verse 11, we're focusing on. Verse 11. And he said unto me, thou must prophesy again before many peoples and nations and languages and kings. And we think this is, again, like our chapter 12, verse 17. It's brought us to a point that after 1799, the church is being told that there's going to be a future witness to be given. It will be a future witness before the kings. And that's another aspect of what we're think we're being told about this future witness for the truth that will bring the martyrdom of the final feet members of the body of Christ, the heel members, if you will. And we think that this verse, in the same way as 12:17 verse, are closing the chapter study after 1799, saying, don't think it's all over for the church. Don't think there's nothing more for you to do. There is going to be something to do, but it's going to wait till the final feet members. It's going to be like the crescendo of the experiences of the church. And if I could say one more thing, what happened to the head of the church is going to be similar to what happens to the final feet members of the church. Who persecuted the head of the church in the end? It was two religious groups, Pharisees and Sadducees, who convinced a reluctant civil authority, Pilate, to put Jesus to death. So our beast, papacy, our false prophet, Federated Protestants, cooperate to convince the dragon, civil power, to persecute the final heel members of the body of Christ. We think there's a similarity there. But, okay, let me take a breath, open that up for any comments or questions. Brother David.
Just quickly, the idea of rolling together like a scroll and the idea of apostolic succession, the two things that are really passed as far as a doctrine that worked in the past for Satan, but it did have a very unifying element for the church, and the civil powers did get behind it, and with the Evangelical Alliance, it kind of alludes to that all by itself, that that will be a, if nothing else, if that isn't everything, at least it is a gelling factor, over, if that makes sense, over.
Okay. All right. Good. Thank you. Further comments at this point? Well, let's leave that perspective. Let's go back to our chapter 12, verse 17, and let's look at some of the other other aspects of this verse. They were commented on, but let's elaborate. The remnant of the seed, these are those who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus. So there's a two aspects here, the commandments of God and the testimony of Jesus. When we look at Revelation 1, verse 2, Revelation 1, verse 2, and Brother Jeff, would you like to read that for us, please?
Who testifies to everything he saw, that is the word of God and the testimony of Jesus Christ.
Okay, any comment on that, Brother Jeff?
Well, no, you can't really get better testimony from anybody other from God better than Jesus.
Can't say it any better than that. No. Very good. So we appreciate that at the very beginning of the revelation, this is part of what we're told to, as it were, will come to us through the revelation. We're going to learn in part about the testimony of Jesus, which is the record of God. And we do appreciate that. Now, let's take that. And Brother Chris, could you read Revelation 19? Revelation 19 and verse 10. Revelation 19, 10.
And I fell at his feet to worship him, and he said unto me, see thou do it not. I am thy fellow servant and of thy brethren that have the testimony of Jesus. Worship God, for the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. So this is one of the verses we would point to as the seventh messenger, Pastor Russell, telling the church, don't worship me. I'm just a messenger. But the main point is worship God for the testimony of Jesus Christ. The testimony of Jesus is past and future. The spirit of prophecy. So it really, take the information from the past, but look forward to it. But it's also connected with Pastor Russell's writings. He is, the Bible is the source, but Pastor Russell is kind of the pointer that helps guide us to how to line these scriptures up so we can understand it and prepare for it the best. Over.
Well, before I leave you there, Brother Chris, or you leave us, in that verse 10, that important point, you've said it well. I am thy fellow servant and of thy brethren that have the testimony of Jesus. Just what does that seem to be emphasizing? Like, it's more of what you're saying.
The spirit begotten class, I think, it's kind of pins it down. A fellow servant, that goes with the earlier common verses we're looking at of, obey the Lord's commandments and hold the testimony of Jesus Christ. So that is the harvest message, is understanding what those commandments are and what you have to do to obey it. The nominal system is all very confused as to what all that means and how to apply it. So, Pastor Russell said in this verse, it's contemporary with the harvest time. The end time is where we keep pointing to and in these verses. I don't know if I'm hitting the point you're trying to stress over.
Okay. No, I appreciate that. That's good. Further comments on this? Okay, so everyone's comfortable with this. What we're seeing is that this messenger, as we call it, was Brother Russell, who was on seventh. So he had the privilege of being used to provide the complete plan outline, the divine plan of the ages, so we could understand these things. And we're living in the time when these things could be looked back on from the revelation and understood. Some things are still future. So the testimony of Jesus in the revelation is about what has happened in the gospel age past and how there's been the strength for the church who were faithful to God, keeping God's commandments. And the testimony in the revelation, the testimony of Jesus, is what's yet future to happen to the church. and that church are those who keep the commandments of God. And then it does tell us about the glorious outcome after the church is complete, and it brings us into the peaceable kingdom, which is also part of this testimony of this, of Jesus' spirit of prophecy. Ruth.
Well, I don't believe these descriptions are ever used of the false. I think it's a code word for the true, because like in verse 12:11, and they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto the death. It's talking about the true saints, even back there, that papacy claimed as their own. But it was the true saints who had the testimony, and then they, papacy claimed that they were Catholic, like Peter and first Pope and all that type of thing. But the description of that they, by the word of their testimony, that it showed, it's like it shows that that's the true.
Yes, and that's great. And that's going to lead us to our next verse we wanted to consider. Brother Michael, could you read for us in Revelation 14? And again, we're kind of jumping in the middle here, so forgive me for that. But it's 14 and verse 12.
Revelation 14:12. Here is the perseverance of saints who keep the commandments of God and their faith in Jesus. I think it's just going to the same message that's being said about the prophecy of Jesus Christ, which is that we must worship God. And I think that really is the thrust of the gospel age, that there's perseverance despite the persecution, despite the false doctrine, that there's clarity for the saints, and that clarity is that they keep the commandments of God and have faith in Jesus Christ.
Okay, very good. And that's very well put, because indeed, since we've studied this far, and the 13th chapter is going to help elaborate it, but we've studied this far in Revelation to see that the adversary has been actively trying to deceive the saints from properly worshiping the true God by deceiving them into believing in transubstantiation or the Mass, believing in the Antichrist system, and believing the various errors that have been presented throughout the gospel age, that the church would persevere through the persecutions, that this would be the keeping the commandments of God, what he has taught and hold us all from the beginning. And yet that's also the testimony of Jesus, is that the true church would have to struggle with all this throughout the gospel age, but they will gain the victory in the end. So it's almost a phrase of saying, be encouraged, you saints. Keep worshiping God, even though there'll be possible terrible persecution in your time, yet the great victory will be there in the end. So you and I, brethren, were blessed to know the end from the beginning because the Lord's revealed it, even though we have to live, each of us, in our own time and keep the commandments of God the best you and I can in our time. All right, Brother Norman.
And it's just fascinating the way the Lord shows this. And we're going to be getting there when we get to 15. But what was just brought out in chapter 14, well, it begins identifying the 144,000 as sealed. So we think that would show completed, not necessarily glorified, but completed. Then we go, and they have the harps of God. They were given the harps by God, which is probably that final message. It goes into the righteous judgments of God. And then in 15, it identifies those as being on the sea of glass, and overcoming the woman, not the woman, the beast, the image, which developed into the false prophet, so it would be the false prophet there.
and the number of his name, probably all those who didn't take the mark, because the 144,000 are victorious. They're shown as being victorious, even though they're not all glorified, which is very interesting. So we get that, you know, it's, as you put it, you know, ratcheting back and forth to get the picture. There's so many verses that tie into all this. There's not enough time to, you know, go through all of them at the same time. But this is a beautiful way that God shows the church is completed but not glorified. They have a final message to give, the testimony of the Song of Moses and the Lamb, ransom and restitution. It's not going to be received by the world at that time. And it's interesting the dragon is missing there, the beast and the image. The dragon's not there, but not sure about that, why, but just how the Lord shows this development and participation as the church is considered as overcomers at this time, just before these very final events. Over.
All right. Thanks, Brother Norm. Brother, are there any comments further on our 12th chapter of Revelation? So we're going to say that we've concluded that. Our 13th chapter is going to be one in which we're introduced to the ten-horned, seven-headed beast, the two-horned beast, and then the image of the beast. So this 13th chapter is going to delve into that, and right in the first verse, 13:1, we see that there is this beast having seven heads and ten horns. So I thought we would do a side study before we began the chapter proper on the heads and the horns. And that's what I had sent out as an email. Now, we don't have much time left in this today's study, which is I'm glad we spent it well here on the 12th chapter. Maybe it will give a chance for some of us to read over what I sent out. I sent it late at night. It actually, believe it or not, is not unlike an email I sent out in January of 2021 to all of you, or most of you back then. And that email, January of 2021, was in regards to our study in the third volume, our Friday night study, back when we were in Daniel, the seventh chapter. And so I updated that email. Believe it or not, with AOL, I could scroll back to that very email in 2021. I made some corrections. And so what I've sent out is hopefully a little more clear. So in this study, the side study, we want to consider the horns and we want to consider heads. We want to consider the horns in Daniel 7, and we want to consider our heads throughout the book of Revelation, so that hopefully we can have somewhat of each of us prove to ourselves something that would be consistent in our own thinking. And so I want to say that because I'm looking at my time, I'm trying to figure out what to do in the best use. But I'll just say that in Revelation, the seven heads, there are a variety of suggestions at what they are. All of the suggestions make them a form of government over the Roman Empire, and that they're successive. And we certainly agree with that. And we've talked about that. We've never tried to identify all seven heads in this study yet, but we will now offer a suggestion next week. It's just strictly a suggestion, because I think by and large, the brethren have some unanimity, even though there are some distinctions. So part of what we might do is look at a couple of verses in the Revelation to that I thought is useful. Maybe we'll start in Revelation 17. Looking at my clock, we don't have much time. But in Revelation 17, and we'll come back next week, so don't feel like this is one and done. But in, let's see here. Sister Cheryl, would you read verses, chapter 17, verses 9 through 11. 9 through 11.
And here is the mind which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. And there are seven kings. Five are fallen, and one is, and the other is not yet come. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth and is of the seven and goeth into perdition.
Okay, I didn't plan it, but I ended up getting you right back in the same place previous reading.
That is kind of funny. That was pretty good.
So, Sister Cheryl, what's some general observations on these verses?
Well, we see that there's divisions of power. We know mountains are kingdoms. It's pointing out that there are these kings. It's showing us a time frame that five are fallen. Papacy was one of them. There's still one yet to come in Victor Emmanuel. And then it takes us back about the beast that he's one of the seven, but he kind of remains as an eighth with his power, but his end will come. Over.
Okay, that's good. No, that's very good. So we're learning here, as Sister Cheryl was saying, that the heads are successive. They follow one another. So that while it tells us that the great red dragon of Revelation 12 that we already studied, the Roman Empire has seven heads. That dragon had seven heads. In chapter 13, verse 1, that beast has seven heads. We're not saying that they have seven heads all at the same time. It's saying that this is an identifier of the Roman Empire, that the Roman Empire has seven heads. And these heads are successive in nature. But unless it said the dragon, the great red dragon had seven heads, and the beast had seven, unless it says it had seven heads, we wouldn't connect them together. If it only had one head, and this one had one head, we wouldn't necessarily make it a power over the same Roman Empire. And yet, scripturally, we think that is what it's trying to tell us. We're looking at the Roman Empire through the snapshot of the Gospel Age period. And has these seven heads, which now we're seeing, and this is a confirmation that they're successive in order rather than all at the same time. Ruth, last comment.
I just had a note from reprint 472 that the medals and coins of the day show Rome as a woman sitting on seven hills. So, one of her titles was the Queen of Nations. So it's kind of like giving a clue that we're talking about Rome, like a play on words. It's the most important thing, of course, is the symbolic that is being covered, but that literally that's what they represented themselves as.
Okay, very good. All right, Brother Michael, I thought last comment. You get last comment.
Sorry, I thought the woman represented, I can see here.
One more time. Sorry, you broke up.
Sorry, I thought the woman represented papacy.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, the woman, and I want to say that the woman in the 17th chapter, particularly here, The woman represents primarily the religious aspect of papacy. Papacy is a religious government. The papacy is a beast. A beast is a religious government. When we talk about just the religious aspect of the papacy, that's the harlot. When we talk about the papacy as a religious government, it makes it a beast. For example, in Revelation 17, in verse 1, again, we're going to come back next week to this, 17:1. And there came one of the seven messengers which had the seven bowls and talked with me, saying unto me, come hither, I will show unto you the judgment of the great whore that sits upon many waters. In this verse, in the time frame, next week, in the time frame, it's showing that it's the papacy as a religion is supported by the people. And in our verse that we talk in verse 9, we see that this woman sits on seven governments over a period of time. That's implying that the seven governments, at least in some aspect, some of them have supported the woman, but at least they've been in existence during the Christian era. More on that to come next week. We do have to close. So we'll come back to this next week, give you a chance to read. I don't think I said, and I'm not sure on that paper. Let me get it. We will read in the third volume, but if you like to read ahead, there is a lot there, but we're going to pick and choose. And if you started, if you like to read somewhere around page 71, we're going to read and focus primarily on 77 through 83. And then you might like to consider, it's very short in the first volume, it's just one page. Sorry, two pages. Two, five, eight. And 259. Okay. Lord willing, next week.